Well, good morning, everyone. I'm Linda Van Horn. I'm delighted to have an opportunity to meet with you in sunny Chicago in November. Who could ask for more? We're delighted you came and brought this great weather. So today, moving ahead, we're going to focus in on sodium, which, of course, is a topic of great discussion and lots of debate these days. But this talk will try to address some of those issues and bring together some of the research issues related to the recommendations, the way that we go about interpreting the science on sodium and health, the feasibility in making some of those changes, and synergy with other dietary recommendations. So we know that high blood pressure is a major problem worldwide, and it is a major cardiovascular risk factor leading to morbidity and mortality worldwide. So the opportunity to try to address it and prevent it is huge. 54% of strokes and 47% of coronary heart disease events are attributed to elevated blood pressure, with 26% of adults worldwide having hypertension, and the lifetime risk of developing hypertension is 90%. Now, the research has shown, especially in regard to reducing dietary sodium from studies like the DASH study that everybody's familiar with, that not only by reducing sodium, but also by achieving a diet that is high in vegetables and fruits and whole grains, one can truly reduce systolic blood pressure dramatically and maintain that lower level even as we age. It's estimated that the preventable deaths from reducing sodium and thereby lowering blood pressure are significant, to the point of over half a million people could be spared from mortality on the basis of just lowering their blood pressure and making these sodium recommendations. The guidelines that have been made, as was mentioned, I was a part of the 2010 U.S. dietary guidelines, and our recommendations were to reduce to less than 2,300 for the general population and to 1,500 for those who are already at risk. The 2015 Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee has recommended to sustain that 2,300 level. Healthy People 2020 also, and the IOM in a 2010 report reduces the sodium of the food supply, but without providing a floor in terms of that recommendation. And then the American Heart Association, American College of Cardiology guidelines that were recently released also advocate to lower blood pressure, reduce sodium to 2,400 milligrams a day and 1,500 milligrams for those who are at higher risk. But for all people, lowering sodium by 1,000 milligrams a day would achieve a tremendous benefit in terms of reduced blood pressure. Average American sodium intake for people over 2 years of age currently is almost 3,500 milligrams a day. So by reducing by 1,000 milligrams, that would come closer to meeting those recommendations. But the debate over the ultimate target for sodium shouldn't derail the attempts to try to reduce those sodium intakes. And the World Health Organization, as well as Health Canada and other countries worldwide, have joined into these kinds of recommendations, with likewise making recommendations somewhere around 2,000 to 2,400 milligrams per day. The text is too small, but I have just three studies that have shown significant tracking of blood pressure from childhood to adulthood. So by initiating efforts to try to lower sodium intake and keep blood pressure low in childhood, that has a huge impact on aging and adults as they get older. In addition, a study that was called the Young Finn Study, which is a combination of Young Finn Study, the Bogalusa Heart Study, the Muscatine Study, and the International Childhood Cardiovascular Cohort Consortium, all in these four longitudinal studies, showed the strength of the association between childhood risk factors and carotid intima media thickness is dependent on childhood age and the impact of tracking in terms of those risk factors based on diet and sodium intake. And likewise, in this cardiovascular risk in young Finn study, they showed, in addition, benefits in terms of lowering LDL cholesterol, as well as systolic blood pressure and carotid artery calcium, indicating the benefits of, again, starting early and continuing further on. Finally, especially in African Americans, their study has also shown that by reducing high blood pressure in African American children, the prevalence of left ventricular hypertrophy can also be significantly improved over time. About 90% of children between the ages of 6 and 18 eat too much sodium, with additions of upwards of 2,900 milligrams, even in the youngest age groups, all the way up to 3,600 milligrams of sodium among those who are adolescents or teenagers. All of us are familiar with where the sodium comes from. In particular, if you look on the right, the salty six for kids, pizza, bread, cold cuts, savory snacks, sandwiches, cheese, again, foods that all of us are familiar with are just extremely high in sodium and are very commonly consumed. As far as dietary sources, on days a school meal is consumed, usually the school cafeteria contributes about 26% of the total sodium of that child's intake for the day, with the remainder coming from processed foods purchased in the store, and then restaurants and fast foods, etc. Now, as far as interpreting the recent science on sodium and health, and I'm sure everyone has been familiar with some of the back and forth that has gone on over that topic, just to remind everyone of why there is so much of a debate as far as some of these studies are concerned. Some of it has to do with methodologic landmines, also just the challenges of measuring sodium, the high cost of high-quality sodium research, and commercial interests. There's a lot of interest, as you might imagine, to maintain the sodium level in order to produce and provide inexpensive foods. Then there's the whole role of the government and the type of evidence needed to actually guide policy. So that, of course, generates a tremendous amount of media and a lot of controversy, and media loves controversy, so it just sort of keeps the ball rolling as far as that's concerned. But some recent observational studies suggest that sodium intakes below recommended levels, that is, lower than 1,500 or 2,300 milligrams per day, may increase risk of adverse outcomes. And these studies have led to confusion about recommended sodium intake targets. But you really need to be careful in interpreting the results of these observational studies, because they depend so much on the study design, the types of data collected, and the statistical approach that was used. Dietary self-report may use databases that are not specifically designed to test the sodium and cardiovascular disease relationship. I work in this particular area of research, so I'm extremely familiar with the differences in the dietary data, as well as the complexities of trying to assess accurately dietary intake of sodium, and the fact that really the only way that can be done is by collecting multiple 24-hour urine specimens, which is very costly and time-consuming and burdensome. But the majority of the research, of course, doesn't go to that level because it's very expensive. So the accuracy of measures is very difficult to maintain across all of the different studies. The empirical analysis of 26 different cohort studies regarding the relationship between sodium and cardiovascular disease detected on average 3 to 4 methodological problems in each of these studies. Optimal, as I said, is the 24-hour urine, But suboptimal are the single or poor quality 24-hour urine collections without specific instructions in getting the cooperation of the participant. The use of spot or overnight urines, which is very popular but very poor in terms of its ability to actually provide an accurate measure. And then the 24-hour dietary recall or diet history, or worse yet, the food frequency questionnaire, where the ranges of dietary sodium intake can vary as much as 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams per day. So with all those kinds of confusing and conflicting sets of conditions, there are additional problems related to reverse causality, which is a common problem in terms of including people who are already sick or who have already been told that they have high blood pressure and therefore are already on a lower sodium or a modified diet, as well as the inevitable insufficient number of cardiovascular events to actually support the conclusions that have been drawn. And then, as mentioned earlier, just the pure high cost involved in conducting good quality research of this type. But the best evidence, of course, comes from these studies that have involved 24-hour urines, and those are very clearly showing that with higher sodium intake, the hazard ratios are increased. And the feasibility of these studies and the idea of trying to reduce sodium, I'm also very familiar with, in the sense that I actually did my doctoral work in high school, working with kids and trying to help them follow a lower sodium diet. And it was really, little did I know at the time that this would be a major finding that was not publishable but very important to the rest of my career, and that was that in conducting that study, we used a crossover design so that half of the kids were on a lower sodium diet and then halfway through the study they were supposed to switch after a washout period. And after 4 weeks of being on a lower sodium diet, the kids that were supposed to switch back to the usual diet, not a higher sodium diet, just the usual diet, couldn't do it. They had already altered their taste sensitivity to the point that the usual school diet was too salty. They couldn't eat it. It totally ruined my study design, but as I said, it taught me an incredibly valuable lesson about eating behavior and the ability of, especially for children, and these were high school kids, you can imagine how picky they can be, and yet they found it just impossible to go back to eating that much sodium. So needless to say, it was a valuable lesson and one that I think we could all benefit from as far as recognizing that gradually, if we titrate lower, those adaptations can take place. So lowering the sodium in school foods is achievable, and I think we're going to hear more about that soon as far as where the rubber meets the road in the school and in the school lunchroom. But the idea of trying to just work with lower sodium ingredients and trying to make tasty alternatives in terms of herbs and spices and switching to lower sodium choices where possible, it can, in fact, be achievable in a way that requires just some thought and using the lower sodium alternatives. Health and nutrition professionals should remember that the public health recommendations are made after weighing the evidence, including all these studies, including the strength and design and systematic reviews, et cetera, and the guidelines are established based on the totality of the evidence. So the American Heart Association and the other national, international public health and science organizations have continued to maintain their stance on the importance of reducing those sodium intakes. There are also synergistic benefits that, of course, relate to reducing sodium can also be achieved by increasing fruits, vegetables, whole grains, low-fat dairy products, etc., and also reducing portion size. Needless to say, as energy intake increases, sodium increases right along with it. So by reducing portion size, it not only helps to control body weight, but also helps to reduce the sodium intake. And also decreasing the sodium and increasing potassium can likewise have benefits as far as lower blood pressure is concerned. So elevated blood pressure is definitely a leading cause of preventable death worldwide. There's no debate about lowering sodium intake to 2,300 milligrams per day. The major methodological issues limit the usefulness of the recent studies as a basis for guiding policy, much less reversing those recommendations. And the estimated benefits of sodium reduction are substantial and warrant major public health efforts to reduce sodium intake overall. The prevailing recommendations are supported by the best evidence, and our policies must align with this evidence. And I just want to illustrate to you, in case you haven't seen it lately, but this reflects the fact that really there's no one in our entire nation that is consuming the recommended 2,300 milligrams. The entire population consumes more than what is recommended. So the opportunity is huge, and the idea of trying to work with children to start them out with a lower taste for sodium that hopefully can be sustained throughout their lifetime is public health approach number one as far as trying to reduce overall cardiovascular disease. Thank you.